Blog Talk Radio.
Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, April the 7th. As we like to do once a week, we'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We got a lot to talk. Obviously, the virus is the central story, and there's a lot of related stories to that. These press conferences that the president is doing just every day, I guess now he's been doing it, and they go on forever, 2 hours. I've never seen anything like that. The man has unbelievable energy and incredible detail. I mean, the things that he says are pretty remarkable. Whether you like him or not, the guy is pretty incredible. The blame game is in style now. Everybody has something to blame. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But before we talk to Bill, I just wanted to briefly mention the passing of Al Kaline, one of my all-time favorite baseball players who passed away yesterday. He was 85, 86. I picked him up a little bit later in his career. He started in the early 50s, but by the time I picked him up, it was in the late 60s, early 70s. But he was an absolutely wonderful baseball player and just a great gentleman. That's all you can say about Al Kaline. So rest in peace. Number six, that was his number. I remember that with the Tigers. Let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. How are you, Bill?
Oh, as well as can be expected, Silvio, given the fact that we're holed up in our home, looking out the window, very few cars, very few people on the street. People are taking this very seriously. I am without ice cream, which is a disaster for me. I am without a haircut. I said to my
Bill,
wife,
you might look like a hippie here pretty soon. You know, we'll put your picture on Urgent Agenda, and we'll say
yes.
The new look, Bill. You know,
I'm going to try to find some old Che Guevara T-shirt, and I'll look perfect. You know, and hey, man, you know what I mean? It's really taken quite seriously here.
Yeah, it is.
Of course, we're in the New York suburbs. We're not in New York City proper, but they're. Does seem to be some indication that some progress is being made, and we hope it is.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that, and I want to say this complimentary to really the American people. I know Vice President Pence yesterday was talking about this, and he's very good at delivering a message like this. He's wonderful. Mm-hmm. But I really, the American people really have stepped up to the plate here. And have done, I don't want to sound like the vice president, but he's exactly right. I mean, people have stepped up to the plate, and they're doing this, and they're behaving. There are some idiots here and there that get away, but they're quickly pointed out and harassed by the rest of the population. But I think overall, Bill, when people look back at this, they're going to say the American people really did their job, Bill.
Yes. I have never seen the country whip together this quickly. And fortunately, at least so far, we have not had the awful presence of the political left haranguing us as we did after 9/11, where within a few days they were out blaming the United States. I mean, this is a disease. Of course, they're all looking for ways to blame Trump.
Yes.
But there has been a tremendous level of cooperation. And also, I think it says a great deal about the communication system in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You can reach the entire nation immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And they have responded. I think that, as I said before, and I think it needs repeating, I've never seen the country whipped together this fast. I mean, Trump has done a remarkable organizational job, whether you like him a lot or not. And in terms of his press conferences, no president has been more transparent and has been more giving of his time to communication. Now, I'm not so sure that's always good. You know, I've always had this feeling that presidents, when they go out before the press, are always taking a risk that they'll say something wrong. You know, at one time, people, I think listeners will be interested in this. At one time, the rules of the White House were that you could not quote the president directly. That was during World War II, during the Roosevelt administration.
Yes.
I think it was also true during the Truman administration that you had to have permission to give an exact quote. The press conference was held. It was not held live on radio. And a transcript was made, and they would go over the transcript later so that the president was not embarrassed. Because when you make a number of comments in response to questions, sooner or later you're going to make a mistake or say something untoward. I think it's very dangerous. I think that it doesn't these live press conferences, with the exception of the prepared part where the president delivers the message that has been prepared, as soon as they get to the questions, everything goes downhill. And they get these trivial questions from anti-Trump journalists. It is not doing the country a bit of good.
No.
I would prefer in certain emergencies to go back to the old system where the president is not quoted directly and statements are released after the news conference once they have been examined and cleared. Now, people say, well, that's not really what the press is about. Well, the press is not the country. The country is to be served first. And I think that correcting a president's statements before they're released to the public makes a lot of sense.
Right. No, I actually do agree with you. I think one of the mistakes, for example, and I said so many times, we said it on the air many times, that I thought, for example, President Trump had the habit of he was getting into the helicopter and these people were shooting questions at him. And then, of course, he makes a statement. And then 2 months later, people print a timeline of what he said. Well, but they don't tell you the question that led to what he said. I mean, they just give you what he said. And then they say, see, he didn't care about the problem because on the February the 27th, he said this. Yeah, but they don't tell you what the answer was or the question.
That's right. That's
but,
right.
And I was always critical of President Trump for answering those questions because on one hand, I mean, I know he likes to be transparent, and that's a good thing. But he walked into the kind of trap that we're seeing right now where some reporter says, well, on the 22nd of February, you said that the virus was a hoax. Well, that's not what he said. He was answering a question about – specifically that question was some reporter said, some of your critics are saying that the virus could destroy your economy and your reelection. Well, that's the question he was answering. So he was
right.
The hoax was not the virus. The hoax was the critics who were saying that – who were saying whatever they were saying. But this is the problem you run into when you know, the media will only tell us what he said but won't give us the question that led to what he said. It's called context, and if anybody knows context, Bill, it's somebody like you who worked at the New York Times for years.
Oh, that's right. And what I saw something last night that was so outrageous that I actually turned off the television set, which I very rarely do. It was naturally Jim Acosta of CNN, who's one of the worst offenders. And he was saying, well, the president has spent a great deal of time giving us, even though he has only a business background, giving us a lot of medical advice. He's done nothing of the kind. He's never given any medical advice. For medical advice, he turns it over to his experts, and they come out and give the medical advice. What Acosta was referring to was that the president had mentioned several weeks ago this drug that is used to treat malaria. And apparently there had been reports of some good results in treating this virus. And I think the president said something to the effect that we ought to look into this. That's all he was saying. That's a perfectly reasonable thing. And they did look into it. And now there are studies underway, formal studies underway, which are in the initial stages are promising. The president did nothing wrong. But the CNN is the anti-Trump network, and they will look for every opportunity to hurt Trump. Now, what is almost funny here is late last week, a CNN anchor got into an argument on the air with Peter Navarro. And the anchor was saying to Navarro, you're not a doctor. You're not a doctor. Are you qualified to be discussing this? And Navarro said, well, I have a PhD in economics. I know how to do research and how to question the subject. And here we are this morning, all over CNN is the memo that Navarro wrote to the president in January warning about a virus. And suddenly the fact that he's not a doctor doesn't seem to mean anything anymore. I mean, suddenly he's the world's greatest expert. The phoniness is beyond belief. It really is. The press, many reporters have done a good job. I think many have tried to do a thoughtful job. The press is still terribly lacking on research, on understanding science. They're scientifically illiterate. I think that you would think that with all the time these 24-hour news services have, they would go back into history to the Salk vaccine and just remind people of the fact that we've gone through things like this before and how they were resolved. I mean, it would be a fascinating thing, I think, for most viewers, but they spend all their time just yapping, giving very little information. I mean, they have given the basic information, but very little actual information. I think Fox has done the best job, as it usually does, in putting on a variety of experts and putting on physicians who seem to know what they're talking about. As far as the others, the bias shows so badly that it ruins anything else that they do.
Right.
And I think it's the press that ought to be examined, but there's nobody examining the press except for people like us, you know, who are independent of their grasp.
Mm-hmm.
But I
right.
think that we have to really examine in this country, after this is over, the role of the press, the proper role of the press, and how it can be corrected.
Right. Well, I think the public is showing their attitudes about the press by just turning them off.
Yes.
I mean, if you look at the ratings, and you know, I know that you have said this many times, but it bears repeating. We're a nation of 330 million people. Actually, I've heard 350. I'm not sure if it's 330 or 350. Either one, it's a big number. We're a
yeah.
nation of 330 million people, and on any given night, on prime time, that is, CNN averages a million people. So
that's
one
right.
out of 330 million people in the United States takes the time to watch that network. What does that
that's
tell me? Now,
really?
let's discount the fact that there are children in that 330. So let's say that out of that 330, let's say 160 is adults. Okay, just roughly. Let's say half of them are adults. So one out of 160 people takes the time to watch that network. What does that tell me? That they're not, they don't have a lot of influence, Bill.
They really don't. I think that the only reason CNN is even listened to in Washington is that when it was founded by Ted Turner, who later married Jane Fonda, I think that tells you something, when it was founded, they established a very important Washington presence early on, and they were the first network cable news system. So they have a certain prestige, but that prestige should have disappeared years ago because they're not doing the job of a news network. They have 24 hours a day, and I think back to when I was in journalism, when you had network news operations being run by Richard Salant and Reuben Frank at NBC, they would have given anything for an extra half hour a day. These guys have 24 hours a day, and look what they do with those 24 hours. Not much. Really, not much at all.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. And these press conferences, these questions, you know, you would think, I don't know, if I was the editor of a news organization or a newspaper, that instead of sending the political reporter to a press conference, that I would send maybe the medical reporter or
yes.
an expert or somebody, you know, maybe who understands something. No, it's almost like, Bill, if I could use the example, it's like the reporters at these press conferences are like the generals who are fighting the last war. They
That's
think
right.
that the way you ask these questions is to trip and try to got you, Trump. What
That's
they
right.
don't understand, Bill, please correct me if I'm wrong, but what they don't understand is that the country is tuning these press conferences not to hear Trump destroyed, but to get information. You've got millions
That's
of
right.
people sitting in their homes. They're not working. They're sitting, I mean, everybody has time to watch these things. The last thing you want to hear is, well, somebody said this, and then it turns out the person who said it worked for the Obama administration. But they don't tell. I mean, this is so bad that these reporters ought to go home and say to themselves, what are we doing here? We're making fools out of ourselves, Bill.
Well, yeah, but the fact is that that's what we feel. But within what has become of journalism, they've become heroes. These are the people who are taking on Trump. And the changes that occurred in journalism that are causing this occurred in the 1960s. And the 1960s generation is the generation that is now probably actually retiring, but in charge of journalism. And they learned that came to believe that the purpose of journalism was not to report the news without fear or favor, but to report a higher calling. Our calling is to make a difference, to change society. Well, that traditionally has been the job of the editorial page, but they've made it the job of the news page. And as soon as Trump became president, some reporter at the New York Times wrote that this is completely different from anything we've ever seen, therefore it must be reported differently. No, it should have been reported exactly the same way as any other president. But I think that those days of reporting without fear or favor in the mainline press are over. And if you look at the White House press corps, many of them are so young and inexperienced and don't seem to know very much. At one time, the White House assignment was a prestige assignment. And you could watch a news conference with President Kennedy, for example, and the questions were serious. They weren't always answered seriously, but they were serious. Nobody would get up and play gotcha with Jack Kennedy or with the presidents who followed. The first live press conferences were actually during the Eisenhower administration, and Eisenhower wasn't a good speaker. But they decided to use television to go live, but the questions were on a much higher level than they are today.
Yeah.
The reporters understood that it's a serious world. And you would also think, as you just said, I would certainly send scientifically literate people to press conferences rather than some of these young kids who are just playing gotcha with the president.
Right. And you would think with the type of talent that is behind Trump in these press conferences, Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx, some of these admirals who are making the military look proud, some of these military people, you would think that, you know, these people would love to get better questions than, you know, just the typical gotcha questions. But I don't know. I have a theory. I cannot prove it, but it's just a gut feeling from talking to others. I think most of the country is looking at these press conferences and saying, folks, is this all you have? You know, here you have people who don't know how they're going to pay the rent. You got people who don't know how to make their payroll. You got people who are struggling. You got people who are sick. I just learned this morning that a friend of mine may be having symptoms. And I'm sitting there going, the country is like at another level. And these reporters are still playing the got you game. I don't think it's working, Bill. I really don't. I just saw a Zogby poll this morning that says the majority of the people support the work that the president is doing.
Yes.
There's a disconnect, I think. Forgive me for interrupting you, but I think there's a disconnect between these reporters who seem to be dwelling on anti-Trump nonsense and the rest of the country who wants to hear solutions to the problem, Bill.
I think you're absolutely right. Well, the press is today a business. Well, it's always been a business. And you want to get promoted within the business. And to get promoted today within the business, you certainly can't be pro-Trump, except at Fox. I mean, you have to, in effect, play the party line. You know, it was said during the 1960s, when a lot of these problems in journalism began to emerge, that if we had the press in World War II that we had in Vietnam, that we would have lost World War II. And I think there's a possibility of that. Because what happened in the 60s was, first of all, the takeover of journalism by television journalists. You know, most of people at one time got most of their news from newspapers, and then later from radio. But in the 60s, the television journalist was fully established. Most people, almost all, had television sets. Some even had color sets. New technology allowed reporting from around the world very quickly. And I remember it being said within journalism during that period that as the television journalists took over, the books the journalists wrote got shorter and shorter because they got used to encapsulating everything in a minute. And they began to think that way. And they did not continue thinking in the kind of detail we expect of a good newspaper reporter. And also, we had our first generation where journalism was filled with college graduates. You really had to be a college graduate to get a job in journalism. At one time, that had not been true. Journalism was a more personal business. You got a job as a copy boy or a copy girl, and you worked your way up. Here we were affected by what they were taught in college. And I'm sorry to say that we weren't quick enough to realize that what was being taught in college was not necessarily the kind of thing that makes for a good journalist. It might make for a good socialist, but not necessarily a good journalist. And I think that problem has continued and has grown worse over the years. You don't have journalists today of the stature that we had when I was in journalism. Men, for the most part men, but some, very definitely some women, who had worked all their years to establish a reputation and did, and you had to trust in them. Today, I don't know, is there any one journalist who we can trust, who is big enough to have a household name? We trusted Cronkite. That was probably a mistake, by the way, back in the 60s. But I don't see it today. I don't see somebody rushing to a television set to watch a particular individual because they have so much faith in that individual. As you said, I think more and more people are tuning out because they don't like how the news is presented.
Yeah, well, I think the numbers speak for themselves, you know.
Yes.
And, you know, you've mentioned it yourself several times on the show, but I think it bears repeating. You have, on any given night, there's about 7 million people who watch cable news in a country as large as this. And they're basically divided, you know, 4 for Fox, 2 for MSNBC, and 1 for CNN. There are radio stations in the United States with a larger audience than CNN.
Yes.
And in many of the big markets. So, I mean, they think they have a lot of influence. But I'll tell you where CNN really offends me is when they go overseas, because people overseas. I had a conversation with someone a couple of days ago in South America about this, because he was complaining that they were getting – the news was so negative. So I said, well, what are you watching? And he said, well, I'm watching CNN. I said, well, just turn it off. You know, he thought that everything in the United States was going to hell because all he watches is CNN. And I said, well, no, not everything is going to hell. In fact, Trump has a lot more approval than you think he does. But CNN apparently makes their money doing that overseas with all these locations.
That's it.
Without that, they would go out of business in the United States.
Oh, CNN International is the big thing. And I've heard that same complaint that you watch the international edition, and it's real anti-American stuff. But, you know, when you look at the history of CNN, I mean, Ted Turner was a leftist. The people running it today are leftists. And I recall back in the 1980s, was it, that CNN's first big non-daily project, big documentary project, was a documentary series on the Vietnam War that was produced by an anti-war activist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they didn't even have the sense to go neutral and to say, we can do this as well as anybody else. I mean, this is what modern journalism is. It's cause journalism. It is more like the British press or the European press. And I think it misinforms the American people. And I think it is very much a reflection of the educational system.
Yeah. Well, it misinforms the public, and the public is showing their dissatisfaction with it by turning it off. And I think that's eventually, you know, the people who do the advertising will get the word, but more and more people are just tuning out. Even Fox News. I mean, even Fox News. I mean, like, I don't watch everything on Fox News anymore either, because it does, you know, sometimes over at Fox News at night, it seems like the president can do no wrong, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But I will say this for Fox News, and then we'll take a break. For all the, yes, it is true that Fox News has a pro-Trump slant, if you will. Certainly the opinion shows. I think the news shows are better. But
yes.
Clearly, you know, you got Tucker Carlson, you got Hannity, and you got Laura Ingraham. I mean, clearly they have a pro-Trump position. But I see more healthy debates in those shows. I mean, if you watch Laura Ingraham, I had a chance to watch her last night. There's a lot of good liberal conservative debates that take place on that show. I mean, you clearly Laura Ingraham is a conservative, but she invites a lot of liberals, and they have a lot of healthy debates. I don't see that at CNN, and I don't know of a serious conservative who would even waste his time going to MSNBC, Bill.
Well, MSNBC is vile. I mean, they're just vile. And we should remember and point out that this is not the first time this has happened in these organizations. Go back to the Bush administration after 9/11. They tried to destroy Bush with every broadcast, and MSNBC was the worst. And they tried to blame Bush for Katrina, which turned out to be an excellent recovery effort. But I recall, get Bush, get Bush, get Cheney, get Cheney, and the constant suggestions that everything that Dick Cheney did was related to his personal business affairs, which it was not. Bush was, I mean, remember Brownie, who had the head of FEMA? He has no background in this. What a terrible job he's doing. Well, when experts, real experts, looked over the job that was done in Katrina, they found a very different picture. They found a very capable rescue and protection operation that reduced the predicted murder, not murder, the predicted death rate of 10,000 to about 1,100. Now, when you can reduce the predicted murder, the predicted death rate from 10,000 to 1,100, that's not called failure. That's called success.
Right.
And Bush did it by bringing the Coast Guard in early to prepare the city for the deluge and to rescue people early. And the fact of the matter is that most of the charges that were made, the wild-eyed charges against the Bush administration, turned out not to be true.
That's right. No, that I think the press really went to hell during Katrina. It didn't do itself any favors. And I think a lot of the reasons, and I really believe this, a lot of the reasons that people are tuning out the press, and the press has very bad ratings if you look at their credibility ratings. I think a lot of it has to do with Katrina, the way they basically covered for President Obama, never asked him any tough questions. And I think a lot of that has caught up with them. We're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about China, the WHO, and a few other things. Be right back. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, talking a little bit about the virus and the politics of all of this. Bill, before we get to the WHO, I just wanted to bring this up. This is this morning in the Dallas Morning News, as they do every day, they have the figures for Texas. We have a population of 29 million. In that range, of course, the second largest state in the union in terms of population. We've had 8,100 cases, 152 people who have died from corona, and 60% of the people who've died are people over 70. In many cases, they're telling us that they already have some pre-existing conditions. I look at these numbers and I feel pretty good about Texas when you compare it with other states. And if you look at the most of the center of the country, what they sometimes disrespectfully refer to as Trump country, it seems like most of those states are doing fairly well, Bill. So, I think Texas has done a good job. We have a great governor here who's doing a great job. Texas was ready for this. And that's another question, Bill. I didn't mean to stop you there, but I just wanted to put this on the table. If everybody wants to play the blame game, one question I would like to ask the people of the governor of New York and the governor of Illinois and some of these other states, you guys are complaining all the time, but you weren't ready for anything. So what are you complaining about?
Well, that is one of the most ridiculous things about this entire episode has been the emergence of Andrew Cuomo, as they now call him, America's governor. And he gets on the air for 2 hours and just talks, and the networks cover him as if he's some sort of a god that's come in. Andrew Cuomo is a two-term governor of New York. He has been in office, I think, 7 years? There is not any indication that he had any idea how to prepare New York State for a disaster. New York State is the leading terrorist target in America, and apparently nothing has been done in that area. Nothing has been done in the medical area. We now know that he was offered additional ventilators several years ago and turned them down. He wouldn't put it in his budget. Instead, he went out and started buying these harebrained schemes from the environmentalists. He is against fracking, which means that New York State has not participated economically in the fracking boom because the environmentalists tell him that fracking is bad. Although it's been done for years in the United States and the country is still here, I don't see what damage has been done. Fracking is what made this country energy independent, and he doesn't seem to care very much about that. New York is also under Andrew Cuomo's leadership, if you want to call it leadership, the largest out-migration state in the country. In other words, more people leave New York every year than any other state. That's not a compliment to New York. And yet he is portrayed as the savior, the man who came in, the rational version of Donald Trump. The fact is he's never done anything.
Yeah. Well, he is, he is, of course, the darling of the media right now because they're hoping that he runs against Trump. Although I think if he does, they're going to find out some things in Cuomo's background that are not going to make him very popular outside of New York. But I just asked the question, it seems like everybody's saying, why wasn't President Trump ready? Well, why wasn't New York ready? I mean, Illinois is another example. That's another state losing people like crazy. I mean, nobody wants to live there. People are leaving Illinois. I mean, the busiest highways in Illinois are the people moving out because the taxes are horrible. I have a friend in Chicago who tells me that you pay taxes in Chicago just to support the pensions of public officials,
That's right.
A disaster. And these states, they're the ones who apparently are having problems, but nobody's asking the question, what did you do to prepare for this? Maybe the reason they couldn't prepare, Bill, is because their taxpayers are fleeing the state and they don't have that much
Bill. That's right. And another thing that really is enraging me is that it does turn out that some statistical studies of the virus show that they hit minority communities the hardest. And apparently the numbers will back that up. Well, there's nothing in the virus itself that apparently chooses minorities, but we can ask some very tough questions about how some of these minority areas are run and who's doing the running and who's doing the leading and congressional representatives who've never done a thing to help these areas. The minority communities in particular have been completely unprepared to handle something like this, but nobody wants to ask any questions about their leadership. And that enrages me as well. They just want to go after Trump.
Right. And, of course, if you ask the question, why is it that, for example, New Orleans, with a large black population, is doing worse than, let's say, the rest of Louisiana, then, of course, they immediately call you a racist for bringing that up. But the fact is that many of these minority communities, particularly the African-American community in many of these cities, life is not that good for them. It has nothing to do with Trump. It was that way under Obama. 8 years of Obama didn't do a darn thing for these African-American communities, except speeches that he would give and tell everybody what a great speaker he was, but didn't do a darn thing for these African-American communities. Even states like California, run by the Democrats, or New York, run by the Democrats, are not doing anything for African-American communities.
No,
but,
of course,
it's always Trump's fault. What else can you say?
Well, that's it. It's Trump. When the statistics come out, you can be sure that Trump will be accused of racism because look at these statistics, never looking at the local leaderships. That was also the issue, by the way, in Katrina, that the press refused to look at the role of the local leadership, the mayor of New Orleans and the governor of Louisiana, and their horrible performance during the Katrina episode. It's federal, it's Bush, it's Bush, it's Bush. I remember a big deal was made of the fact that Bush flew over the area of the deluge to see the devastation, but he didn't land. I don't know what he would have done had he landed. Had he seen more devastation? I mean,
right.
He flew over specifically to get a picture of what was happening in the area. Then he went on and landed and mm-hmm. went back to work, which is what a president does. But they wanted him to come and be, you know, put his arm around people and have photo ops and things. You know, maybe he could have gone to the 350 school buses that were right next to the Astrodome without bus drivers,
right.
And maybe asked indelicately, could you tell me why these buses don't have drivers? I mean, but you don't want to say that because that's going after the local leadership, and that's racism. We are paying the price right now in this country for identity politics.
Mm-hmm.
Identity politics is a curse. It really is. It's terrible, and we're seeing the result of it. I mean, you have a presidential candidate on the Democratic side, if he's going to be the candidate, and there seems to be at least a little bit doubt about that. Who is obviously mentally challenged in some way. I'm not a physician. I couldn't diagnose it. But obviously he has slowed down mentally quite a bit. And he has already announced in the, that he's going to choose a woman as his vice presidential candidate. Well, for goodness sake, we are in the middle of a national disaster and an international disaster. Is this the way you want to pick a president? Because
mm-hmm.
whoever becomes vice president will likely become president because of Biden's age and infirmity. And is this the way you want to do it? You eliminate half the population immediately? This is what identity politics does.
Right.
And, you know, the question has been asked, had Barack Obama been president during this episode, how would he have done? I think he would have done terribly.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing we would have had would be a press conference with Obama and his medical team, and he would say something like, "Behind me is a medical team that looks like America." You know,
right.
that going, you know, why we have a doctor from this particular tribe in the West, and we have a female person of African descent, and oh, over here we have a gay doctor. I mean, that's the way they think. They think only in terms of identity. And I think it has done so much harm to this country. I hope the lesson is learned. I don't think it will be.
Well, who knows? But, you know, the Democrats who seem to get national attention, just to go back to the point you made about, you know, you get national attention if you attack Trump. There's a lady
That's right.
who's a representative, not a federal representative, a state senator or state representative from a Midwestern state who wants to take Donald Trump, President Trump, to The Hague for crimes against humanity.
That's
now,
true, yes.
There was a time in this country where somebody who made a suggestion like that would have been told to maybe go see a psychiatrist, you know. But now
yeah.
this lady is, you know, this is the flavor of the week now. This is the lady who is apparently the face of the party or something. The same with the lady governor of Michigan. I mean, I don't know who she is, but the reports that I get is that she's not very bright. I mean, what people are writing about her, that she's not a very good executive, which is what
well,
you need now. This is what you need now. You need an executive.
Exactly.
And she's not, apparently. But, of course, you know, you cannot criticize her because if you criticize her, you know, she's a woman and you can't, you know what I mean. It's ridiculous. Identity politics is crazy, like you said, Bill.
Yes. And by the way, the person you speak about, the governor of Michigan, is at the top of Biden's list to be the
mm-hmm.
vice presidential nominee. But that's you know, that's what happens. And I fear that Bush might lose the election. I think he's only got a 50-50 chance of winning because once we get out of this, the economy is going to be terrible for a while. He will explain and correctly that it was the virus that did it. But, you know, Nancy Pelosi will be out there with her vicious comments saying, well, this is the new Trump economy, and what you really need is people who are concerned about the little guy, as if the Democrats have done anything for the little guy. I mean, they've done absolutely nothing. And, you know, I don't have great confidence in the future unless there is what is so obviously needed in this country, which is a new center-left party to replace the Democratic Party. I think the Democratic
mm-hmm.
Party is finished in a way. I don't see it coming back. I think it is now under the control of its left wing, and these people are ideologists. They see a party not as a means of of fighting elections, but as being an ideological center.
Mm-hmm.
You listen to these people of the Democratic Party today, they do not even mention the great Democratic presidents of the past and the role the Democratic Party had in building the country in the 20th century. I mean, they probably have never heard of Roosevelt or Truman or Kennedy. I mean, they may have heard of Kennedy because the family is still active, but if you read Kennedy's inaugural address, it would never come out of the mouth of a Democratic president today. I mean, it would be considered warlike and xenophobic and Eurocentric and all the other labels that we've come to live by. But I do think Bloomberg made a terrible mistake when he ran for president as an ordinary Democratic candidate.
Mm-hmm.
He is apparently not too politically astute nationally. He should have formed his own party. And he could have had a great deal of influence over the campaign. But
I agree.
That's history. Yeah.
No, I think he could have been a much more effective option to President Trump than what I believe the Democrats will ultimately nominate, either Vice President Biden or perhaps Governor Cuomo, although my money is on Biden because I for a lot of reasons, like we've talked about before, if you're going to take it away from Biden, you're going to have to explain that to Bernie Sanders people, and they're not going to be very happy with whatever explanation you give them. But let me ask you another issue here, which I think this is going to be the big issue after we finally get over all this terrible tragedy, and that's China and the WHO and what appears to be Chinese influence and many of our media groups. The WHO, Trump is already saying that maybe we need to cut the funding. I hope he does. I hope he does.
I certainly hope he does.
Yeah, cut the funding of the WHO and then get around and cut the funding of the UN. When the UN puts Iran or China in a human rights committee, that's when you say, folks, this is a joke, and I'm going home and I'm taking my budget with me, Bill.
I remember the days when Daniel Patrick Moynihan was our UN ambassador and was then removed by Carter because Moynihan was too pro-American. I mean, he was one of the best ambassadors we ever had. And he told them at the UN, if you continue doing some of the things you do, then I would be happy to see you off from the pier as you leave New York. I mean, this was considered horrifying by the State Department, but it reflected the views of the American people. The UN is a farce. I mean, it is just a joke. It is controlled by large blocks of dictatorships and countries living in the third world who have no idea how to get to the second world. And I'm sure that the charges against the WHO are true, that it has been much too cozy with China and that it did not do its job in this crisis. And why should we be financing it? We should be forming a new international organization that actually does the work.
Right. And, I think that we need to be serious about the blame game. I wouldn't blame the whole thing on the WHO any more than I would blame the whole thing on President Trump. But at the same time, the WHO was clearly, I mean, there are connections between China and the WHO that are not very healthy. And we know now that China has been engaging in a propaganda campaign. And, all of this has to come out. I mean, I think all of this has to come out. And the American people have to see who's behind these organizations that our taxes are financing. If the rest of the world was financing it, I don't care. But we're financing it. We're the ones who pay substantial amounts of money. And we always seem to get the criticism, Bill. I mean, we get the criticism. It's always our fault. But we're the ones paying the bill.
Well, I think the criticism really derives from envy. You know, one of the things I've noticed in life is that achievement usually doesn't bring admiration. It usually brings resentment. If you really want to be criticized, go out and accomplish something. You're the target immediately. You know, that's why it's often said it is easier to get to the top than to stay at the top, because once you're at the top, everyone is shooting at you. And I think the UN is just a pile of resentment toward the United States, which has done so much good internationally, and as you said, really provides a good part of the financing of the UN.
Right. No, and here's another thing. This is from the WHO. This is a tweet that they put out on the 14th of January, basically saying, and I'm going to read it very quickly, preliminary investigations conducted by the Chinese authorities have found no clear evidence of human-to-human transmission of the virus. This is on the 14th of January, WHO. I'll send you this. Then 2 weeks later, you have Dr. Fauci being interviewed saying, yeah, I don't think this is a major problem. I think we can deal with it. I'm assuming Dr. Fauci maybe was relying on this information. So, you know, it seems to me that there was a lot of evidence here that this was not going to be as serious as it turned out to be. Obviously, somebody was lying, Bill.
Oh, well, yes, and it was apparently the Chinese. And then they did not come out with a straight story, and the World Health Organization didn't look too hard.
Right.
So, you know, and but yet on the part of the left wing of America, you must not blame China. You must not blame China. They are, after all, a nation of a different race. They are a nation that has been oppressed, and we have not been nice to them, and we cannot blame China. But the fact is, the Chinese Communist Party was in charge of this, and they gave out, apparently, false information.
And now we're learning, and this is almost too cruel. I mean, this is almost incredible. Now we're finding out that the equipment that they've sent to some countries is defective.
Yes.
Which is. I mean, that's almost like, my gosh, I, how can that possibly be true? But I guess Italy has had to return some equipment because it doesn't work. I mean, it's unbelievable, Bill.
Well, it is, and people I know who do business with China say it's very difficult, that they're very tough. The image we have of a country of science and a country that is going into the modern world very quickly is accurate in terms of some of its scientific and engineering projects, but that the country generally is ungovernable. It's much too large. It is corrupt. And has a government, basically with a president for life, that operates essentially as one of the world's dictatorships.
Right.
As compared to India, which is, I think, going to be the world's largest country. I believe that in population they're going to exceed China in the not-too-distant future, which is really quite a remarkable place and doesn't get enough of our attention because it is a friend of the United States, you know, in most areas, and is developing a magnificent engineering economy, but yet it kind of gets ignored. I have no idea why.
Yeah, no, I mean, China, I mean, India is an amazing example. I mean, look at the number of Indian engineers that we have here in the United States. I mean, here in the Dallas area, if it weren't for those Indian engineers, all of our high-tech industry would not exist. I mean, and I've talked to many of them, and they talk about what a great educational system they have. I mean, it seems like India did it differently. They did it by educating their people, whereas China did it by making something cheap. And that, I think, is the difference between the two superpowers, Bill.
Well, yes. Look, we're not getting from the press the kind of information about India that we should be getting. We're not getting from the press the kind of information about science and how it is proceeding, just as the press for years missed one of the biggest stories in America that President Trump brought to life, and that is this country's loss of its manufacturing capability.
Yes.
Countries that succeed, economies that succeed, are economies that make things.
Right.
And now we're going to go through another period of ridiculousness, because some of the big corporations, or as the Democrats call it, the big, rich, fat corporations, as Bernie Sanders would say, look at where we're giving the money to. We're giving the money to the big corporations. Well, some of these corporations have actually become institutions in America. A company like Boeing isn't just a company. It is part of the American defense establishment.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We bailed out Lockheed in the 1970s because at the end of the Vietnam War, there just were not enough military contracts to keep the company going. But to our great credit as a nation, we understood what Lockheed meant, the expertise that had been built up over decades, their ability to design a superb aircraft, and they got a helping hand, and they got back on their feet, and Lockheed is Lockheed Martin today, very, very important. Boeing is critical to this country, and they've gone through a bad period. They may have made some mistakes that are being corrected, and the people who helped, made the mistakes should be held accountable. But they're going to get bailed out. There's no question about it. And they employ thousands and thousands of people, I think even hundreds of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are not just corporations. And I wish the press would explain what their role in the country is.
Right. No, you're exactly right. One quick question, Bill, before we go. There's been a lot of talk about, and I'd like to get your perspective from New York on this. There's a lot of conversation, you know, so there are about 8 or 9 states that have not gone formally with the shutdown, like New York or California and so on. Now, these are states in the center of the country where, you know, they may not have, in fact, they don't have a lot of cases. But there's a debate, you know, should everybody be locked down or should some governors be given flexibility? I'm anxious to know what you think about that.
Well, you know, that is a debate that is being held quite actively right now. People sometimes forget the name of the country. The name of the country is the United States of America. We are a group of states, and I think that Trump has been wise to leave a great deal to the states and to its own management. Now, there are other people who feel, medical people who feel, there should be a national lockdown, and that these state governors, I think they're all Republicans, are wrong. I don't have the expertise to answer that question. I don't know enough about the conditions in those states. However, I think one point that might be made here is a point that was made by Mark Levin, the commentator, who was on a few days ago, and he said, isn't it interesting? We get locked down, we turn on our television set, and there is a network broadcasting. We turn on our computer, and we're getting the internet. It's coming from somewhere. People are generating those programs and those features. We turn on an electric light. It works because people at the electric company are working. And he said, there seem to be an awful lot of people out there working and not locked down. And they're providing a lot of important services. And by the way, I should point out, it really should be emphasized, we go to a food store and there's plenty of food being sold and being manufactured and being trucked. There are a lot of people working. So decisions have been made, and apparently by these governors, that in our state, where we're not affected that much by the virus, we're going to keep working. And I would have to know the condition and the situation in each one of those states to make any kind of a rational judgment about whether that decision is correct.
Yeah, well, I think Dr. Fauci yesterday during the press conference said that he had spoken to a couple of the governors, but that overall many of these states are, they're not formally locked down, but they are practicing some distance, safe distance, you know. But if you live in Wyoming, you don't really have, you're more than 6 feet away from your neighbor. You could be a mile away.
Yes.
So,
right.
I mean, you know, you don't need to be, if you go to the store, you know, you might be the only person there. You might be the only person on the road. So I tend to defer to the governors that they should do what they believe they should do. And some of these states are pretty prosperous. They're doing very well. So, you know, I'll trust the voters and the governors. Now, if the president says everybody's got to lock down, I support that too. But so far, that has not happened. So, we'll see what develops. Well, Bill, another week of amazing politics here in the United States. Do you remember anything like this, even 9/11? I mean, it was bad, but I think this is worse in terms of impact, Bill. Because 9/11 was basically New York, I mean, in terms of the casualties and obviously the security of the country. But this is impacting everything, Bill, the rest of the world. Like, I was talking to a friend of mine this morning before I went on the air with you that, you know, we worry about the United States. The rest of the world is like 10 times worse than we are. Because, I mean, we're handing out checks to people.
Right.
There's a lot of countries that can't do that, Bill.
That's right. We have an ability to strike back, to organize, and also, and I think it really has to be said, that the sheer strength of the Trump economy is playing a great role in our ability to fight this thing and to get back on our feet. I mean, we came from a strong economy, and even though when this is over, the Democrats will try to blame Trump for the new economy, which is going to be pretty bad for a while, I don't know if the people will buy it. I hope they don't. But the pro-democratic and pro-leftist press will be emphasizing that. And there will be attempts, there's no question about it, there will be attempts by the hard left, the Bernie Sanders left, to use this as an opportunity to transform the country. Not that anybody is asking for it, but they see all these things as an opportunity. You know, we have to remember that the political left during World War II supported our war effort only because Joseph Stalin told them to. They got the word because in the late 1940s, the political left in America was against our participation. Mm-hmm. They were because Russia was against it. Russia was trying to stay out of the war, and then when Germany invaded Russia, the word was out that now we're anti-fascist and we have to fight. And the left supported the war based on its ideological status. And I think we're going to see that again, and we're going to see it very, very quickly, that the left will reorganize and say, we must control the country because you saw what happened. And it was
all caused by
capitalism. You know?
Exactly. But I'll just say one last word. I think what gives me confidence in President Trump's reelection is that I have not seen any erosion from his base. In other words, I think he starts 2020 where he finished 2016. And I think basically he's got those numbers. So whoever the Democrat is going to have to somehow turn Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin. They're going to have to flip those states. And maybe they can. I don't know. But that's where Trump starts. And if it's Biden, I'm not that worried about it, Bill, because I just don't think he's a very good candidate. But, you know, things could change as they always do. I mean, who would have believed a month ago when you and I were doing a show that we would be shut down like this? But things can change. I always remember your phrase from many times on the show when you say, you never know what's going to happen. Well, I think we're living that right now, Bill. Yeah,
and
we're living
that. Trump says the same thing. He says, we'll see what happens. And, that is why at Urgent Agenda, you'll notice that I never make predictions. And it's much wiser to give an analysis and say, but anything can happen. Who would have known? As you said a month ago, how quickly this has happened and how quickly the society has changed. And now we're getting all the predictions, you know, most of which will not come true, that this will change America forever. I'm not so sure.
No, I'm not so sure either. All I know is that a month ago, Bill, I was looking forward to the baseball season and a brand new stadium here in North Texas. And there's no baseball. So, I mean, look, it's just remarkable how things change. Have a wonderful day, Bill. If you order pizza, make sure you think of me because I always love New York pizza. And I look forward to our next time, Bill.
I do, too, and we'll have plenty to talk about.
I think so. I think we're living in those times when there's no shortage of topics. What can I say?
Right.
All right. Thank you so much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Always enjoy chatting with him, and we'll do it again the next time, as we always do on Sunday nights. Have a wonderful day, everybody. And if you're out there in this situation, you're locked in like everybody else, we're all inside, that's a good place to be right now. I think the best thing for everybody to do is to stay inside and do your part. And I think everybody's doing their part based on what we're seeing in the country. We have a lot to be proud of. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a wonderful day.